right, good evening. This is the regularly scheduled meeting of the Zoning and Planning Committee of the Board of Aldermen. Today is Monday, November 9th, and actually it's a continuation. We did start with a couple of items jointly with the Finance Committee. At the start of the meeting, we have Alderman Sangiolo from Ward 4, Alderman Leary from Ward 1, Karen Dean, our committee clerk, Alderman Baker from Ward 7, Alderman Hesmahan from Ward 3, Alderman Kalis from Ward 8, Alderman Danberg from Ward 6 and Vice Chair, myself, Marcia Johnson from Ward 2 and Chair. So, James, can we just start with what's on top, with John Street? Mm-hmm. Okay. Docket item 293-15, 11 John Street LLC petition to rezone land known as Section 65, Lot 8, Lot 70 at 11 John Street from multi-residence 1 to business 1 to, oh, it's combination, multi-residence 1 / business 1 to business 1. And this is a public hearing, so...
Good evening.
We need the planning board to introduce themselves.
Good evening. Sobel, Chair of the Planning Board. I'm joined today by Jonathan Yost, Roger Weiner, and Peter Barringer. Peter, are you sitting with us as a board member?
You guys got scores, so maybe I'll know.
Okay, and then we have Marie Lawler, who is our associate.
You want to pull a chair up on it, so you want to stand, whatever's comfortable for you.
That's either way, it's fine for me. Good evening. My name is Lawrence Lee. I'm with the law firm of Rosenberg and Lee. I'm here representing the at 11 John Street, John Street office. The petition before you is through a lot of effort and time with a copy consulting us with John Lozier and IMD. It's actually a very unique site whereby the property is really dissected in half in the sense that it is a multi-residence one district and a business use one district. There is an existing house that's been there since 1927. The house was built by us. It was actually built right on the zone line, and I have some helpful handouts. I don't know if you actually have any of that stuff. So this is
Okay.
So that actually goes into the history where, for some odd reason, 22, that site was dissected into two different zones. And a house was built later in 1985 through by-right process, an attached commercial building was added. And that's where the Johnson String Company was for quite some time. And to my knowledge, they actually vacated since my client bought the property about 2 years ago. Now, what we were trying to do was originally keep everything as is, without touching the exterior, the building as used as a residential building, and the office as a office building. Now, because of some information that Johnson Street may have migrated that commercial use into the residential use, their point of view was that part of that non-conforming use of the residence was abandoned. So the way they saw it was that the house could not entirely be used for residences. And only the second floor, which is a by-right use in the business district, and a portion of the first floor was a combination of residence and business use. So after a lot of back and forth, we decided, well, maybe it's easier, and maybe it was actually better for the neighborhood to move the zone line so that it is entirely business or residence. My client looked at this from every aspect, financially obviously being one of them, and they thought because predominantly the zone is that the lot is a business zone, they thought it made sense to shift the line over. We've got a gas station right facing Route 9 to make it all business zone. Now, tonight was actually the first time I actually heard from the folks in the neighborhood that they have some comments about that. And I had a quick conversation with them up at the hallway And what I think may be best would be to potentially hear from John Lojek in terms of some of the brainstorming that we've gone back and forth in this thought process. Yeah. And likely at the end of this, because of the folks' desire to have potentially a all-residential zone, that's something that we'll probably need to talk with my client and with the neighbors about. But I think for the purposes of this, I may formally request a continuance of this request. But at the same time, I do want to go on a record in terms of some of the thought process that we've gone into about this. One of which being simply, if this building was destroyed, what can we build by right? And that's a law school question, unfortunately. There's really not a straight answer. And that's the difficulty. We have a tough balance between what my client is trying to do, really just trying to get an answer as to what can be built, what can I come in for a building permit for tomorrow if the building burned down, versus obviously some of the comments that we're getting back from the neighbor today. So, John, I don't know if you want to add in terms of anything to this.
Well, I think you laid out pretty well. This is a very, very confusing issue, which you might be aware if you look at the documents. As you know, there's a number of situations all over the city that we've been trying to deal with. There's a number of ways we have to deal with them. One is that I'm asked to make a call on something that's fractional. And I can just say, well, it's fairly clear that this doesn't belong in that zone. We've done that on all the road. And these things come by here, and they've just been spared. So that's not. Most of those are one residential use to another residential use, and it's not a big deal.
Right.
But, however, in this situation, we have business in half of this lot and residential in the other half of the lot. And one of the buildings is actually bisected by the lot line. And there was a business in there, and it's non-conforming, and then it had been left. And we found out that it hadn't been there for a time, so now it's declared abandoned. Now they can't even put a business back in there because the residential line comes over. So we're just trying to do our job by saying, well, that's the law. You know, there wasn't that use, but that's an abandoned use, therefore you can't. So now they can't even use that portion of the building. So we're, you know, I think the petition is to, I mean, it's of no consequence to us, one way or the other. That's for the board and the attorneys and the owner and the neighbors to figure out. But we're just saying that this is most of our cases, and as we're trying to do all of the city. Lots should be in a single zone. It's senseless to do it any other way because there's no clarity, and we end up coming here and taking everyone's time to deal with it. I think it's just a matter of, look, what's the best thing for the city? What's the best thing for the owner? What's the best thing for the neighborhood? And you know, a decision should be made about which way this line should move. The arguments are up for them to make. I'm just trying to make clear what the issue is for this board to decide.
So obviously there's no clear answer, mm-hmm. and that's why we're here. And so I think after I have the opportunity, my client and I have the opportunity to speak with the neighbors, we'll likely come back and make a request. So at this point, I'd like to request the continuance of the petition.
Okay, well, I think we have residents here, so I think it's only fair to hear them. So, just a minute, please. We don't really, did we get a sign sheet?
No.
Okay.
I wasn't expecting.
Okay, so maybe you can think. All right, so I'll start over here, going in the back row. So, resident that would, no, I know that. Yeah, okay, so can you state your name and address, please?
Chun Yunong, 10 John Street, Newton, Mass. 14459, directly across the street from
Parkland. Okay. Comment about this?
Yes, I have been living in Newton since 1984. I actually saw the development of the building across the way. Okay. When I first moved in, it was just the residence building there, and it was a nice lawn there. At some point, I believe, probably in the 90s, somebody bought it, and they were trying to convert that into a commercial building. And I think it was voted down by the board. So they built what they considered to be by right on that lot. At that time, the basic concerns are parking and traffic. Apparently based on the size of the lot, because they have parking space behind the house, and then they put the parking space in front of the commercial building, it's insufficient parking space, but I'm not sure exactly why, but when it was a couple of years before Johnson actually bought the premise, initially it was used more as an office space. It was not a lot of traffic. After Johnson bought it, they moved from Newton Center into that space, and there was issues with traffic, especially on weekends. Everybody know that when school starts, violins, cellos, everybody go on weekends to rent, and traffic in there was just horrendous. Also, because of the way that the parking space was set up, people, while they were backing out of the space with their foot on the brake, from time to time will hit parked cars, because John Street was a very narrow street. And sometimes they know it, sometimes they don't, and drive away with dented car. So that to me is also a concern.
Great, thank you. Sir, name and address, please.
My name is Lev Kaufman, 18 John Street. I've been living here for about 7 or 8 years. My opinion, it would be great for, definitely great for a neighborhood, this entire street to have this place residential, more quiet, and many reasons that's already listed, and many potential reasons that everybody understands from having commercial space in this small and tiny street. I believe indirectly it's good to the city. I don't know other technical details to judge it for the city. This is it. So it's also about security, traffic-wise. It's also about security for kids. It's also about the value of the houses, which is probably also a sensitive element on the top of all this security and quiet life factors. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you. Sir, did you want to?
Yes, John Lee, 14 John Street. So my residence is exactly across the street from the lot that we're in question. I share the same sentiments as two previous gentlemen here. Essentially, I've lived my entire life on the street, over 30 years. I have seen what it was before, when it was commercial, and it was very peaceful street. It's a dead-end street, so it's not conducive. It's not, meant for long traffic. Having the Johnson Island there just demonstrates the impact of having, a commercial property there with the foot traffic, the car traffic, additional risk. Specifically, my driveway is one of the first driveways on the street, and a lot of, traffic goes in and out of my private driveway. There's also a lot of traffic in terms of taking up the spots in front of my street, which should be residential, but yet it's being used for commercial purposes. And overall, that's just my major concerns. There's just with creating, transfer the resident into a commercial, it's just going to probably create more traffic. So that's just my concerns.
Great. Okay, thank you. Sir, did you want to make a comment? You don't have to.
Not
the whole thing. Okay.
Anyone? Hi. We are Domenica Del Ponto.
Oh, sorry.
My mom, yep, and our family, we own 3 lots on John Street, and these 3 lots have been in our family for over 70 years. So over the years, we've seen pretty much residential, and as the other two gentlemen said, that it's a narrow street. It's a quiet street, and again, 30 years. However, it is narrow, and it's hard to turn around. It's really not a street for zoned as business. What else can I say that they didn't say? There's a lot more traffic. I mean, Route 9 is off of Route 9, so, you know, people generally don't come down to the street to cut through because it's a dead-end street. But it's just that there's unneeded traffic. I don't really know if there's any benefit to the city to have it, to have that little piece be zoned as a business. You know, for many different reasons, I would say that it should stay residential.
Through the chair, could I ask what numbers John Street, your three lots are?
21, 23, and 27.
Thank you.
And actually, there's an empty lot that is probably just a grassy area. Then there's a four family, which is 21, 23. Then there's 27, which is a single family.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Anyone else that would like to speak? Okay. All right. Then I think I'm going to, you were looking for a continuance. I think I would leave the public hearing open for now.
Yes, please.
Questions from the committee members. Alderman Danberg, I know you had something, and then Alderman Baker.
Yes, the question that I have is on either side of this property, there is business on one side and business on the other side, or is it business and residential?
I'm sorry, this is behind as well.
What's on either side?
What's on either side?
Oh, it's the gas station facing Route 9, I think. Is it Sunoco? Sunoco gas station, so that's business. And then the opposite side, that's residence. So it's really stuck right in between there.
Okay. Fine. And perhaps the next time you come in, if you could bring some photographs of the house and the surrounding area.
Alderman Baker?
That's what I was trying to find on the assessors, and you've clarified it. Because it was unclear to me exactly where the parking was that you were describing.
It's right in the center, so you can go in. There are angled spaces that
right.
were very tight. Yeah. So if they were staying and you're backing out, it would
be
very difficult to get out.
No, that's helpful. Thank you.
Yes, Alderman Leary?
I was wondering how much traffic that this business company generated.
There's no business there now.
There's no business
there. Yeah, Johnson left about 2 years ago.
So
right just, now,
would you say that?
Yes. We've been trying to figure out a way to
points
essentially
to
keep it the same.
Is the residential home that's next to it being used as a residence, or is it also vacant?
That's what John's saying. They can't do anything with it until it's figured out.
My neighbors love it. Quiet.
Yes. The original home is still up.
Yes.
It's still up, and they kept it in its original home.
Right.
Okay, anything else from committee members? Because I'm just not public comment period. We'll stop at the hearing room. Anything else?
Well, I just was curious if there's a new petition. Obviously, this is the one that's been advertised.
Right.
There would have to be a newly docketed item, right?
No.
And no,
just keep the public hearing open. It just continues.
Right, but if
for instance, if it was decided, right now it's being docketed to, it's docketed to go to business one, and if the change was to go to, was it MR1?
MR1.
I would think so. We'd have to start all over again.
If they want to do that, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Any other questions for committee members? James, did you? Planning board?
It would be helpful if you could bring 5 or 6 copies from the planning board.
Okay.
In
addition, I am just curious how many residential units could be placed on that if it wasn't an MR1.
If it was
MR1 instead of going to
2 units.
As a matter of right.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you say that there's nobody actually living in the building either? The residential part? Or is there anyone in there?
There's nobody living in there right now.
Okay. So nobody's occupying?
Nobody's occupying the space at this point.
And across the street is a parking lot? Well, it's not exactly across the street, but there's a parking lot for, looks like a furniture company?
That's correct. I can address that if you want.
That parking lot was owned by, I believe, 345 Boylston Street. It's the building where they had the Verizon antennas on top. I mean, that's actually two separate lots there. One is a multi-story lot, and the other one is a two-story, where the there's a bunch of offices around, a travel agency, and a consignment store.
That's on Route 9, right?
The consignment store is right along Route 9. You have to park. To park, though, you have to go onto John Street. But in order to park, yes, and that's all. That area right there already have traffic and vehicle overflowing into so John Street come driving down and then parking.
Thank you.
Anything else from the planning board or zoning and planning committee? Now, is there a motion to hold?
I'll move to hold.
Okay, it's a motion
if
to hold.
Any strangers on your street, it might be us walking.
Or parking or backing out into people, right? There's a motion to hold in zoning and planning. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor of hold, that's Alderman Sanjoa, Leary, Baker, Danberg, Johnson, Kalis, and Hesmahan. Planning board?
Hold.
Okay. So if the direction is to go multi-resident instead of business, then we need to have it done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the next docket item is docket item 227-15, Shauna Garin et al., petition to rezone land known as Section 51, Block 041, Lot 0011, from multi-residence 1 to business 1. And we had a public hearing a couple weeks ago. And you're going to come back. There is a planning memo that James did for us. Somewhere I have that.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, it's there.
Oh, there it is. Existing boundary between the parcels, I'm sorry.
It's on this side.
Right, what is the current zoning? It's and where, how far does it extend? Is it just that lot? That's what I'm trying to understand.
So this whole corner here is BU1.
BU1, right.
Between Elliott and Chestnut.
Right.
And then on this side it's MR1.
Right. And so this is the boundary parcel between the two.
So this parcel basically, yes, it's right on the line between the two zoning districts and the proposal is to shift the line over.
Is it MR on the south of this one too?
It is.
Yeah. So basically it's MR on two sides and business on two sides.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just trying to understand what the geometry is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's relatively straightforward. I mean, John Lojack actually just spoke to this a minute ago. There is a lot of value in having property that is under single ownership zoned within the same zoning district. And just looking over this project, looking over this area, there doesn't seem to be, frankly, any planning rationale for not moving the zoning district over. So from our perspective, the rezoning makes ample sense. And we also feel that the zoning ordinance in and of itself has built within it a number of it has rules and such in it to deal with the issue of buffering between business and residential uses. Not to say that those couldn't be improved, but we believe that those are there for the reason.
Yeah, exactly that was a big concern at public hearing with the residents on Hale, right?
Right.
Yeah, yes. Complaining. Right. So I think that, I don't know how we, and I think we talked about that, how we can put a little bit of teeth into it so
well,
that...
There was a talk of a private covenant at the time, but now as I read the middle,
well, I can't speak to a private covenant. I would have to defer to the...
No, I understand. But if there's a requirement for the special permit before the lot could be used for parking...
It depends on how they configure the lot, which we don't have at this point, how they might choose to do that.
So
we don't know for a fact there'll be a special permit application.
I got you.
But we have Mr. Bookbinder and Ms. Garen
here. We do.
So
we have the
that maybe there's something that you can share with us?
Yeah, I think that I spoke to James about this. I think we'd like to try to avoid the special permit as an added step. So to the extent So the way the zoning works, if the parking lot is more than 5 stalls, then there are various requirements that might kick in arguably and might require a waiver. I say might because you could also look at this as just an expansion of the existing lot that's already been approved. But I said to James what I'd be more than willing to do is to drop the plan to have 6 spaces and have 5 spaces. And at 5 spaces, we believe that we can configure it as of right. I was mindful of the concern that was raised about the fence. We actually have a plan with us tonight that shows a perimeter fence. And in trying to figure out how to do this, because you're right, it's hard to do this as part of the zoning petition, but I did have a couple of deeds drafted whereby if we deed it out, this parcel is going to be divided in two. Half is going to Shawna for the restaurant, half is going to Robert Fogelman. And what I put into the deed was a restriction that said that the grantee and their heir successors and assigns would construct a fence as shown on the plan for unprepared. We can attach the plan, and they would keep it in perpetuity. Now, the only wrinkle I added, because there can be an issue as to enforcement, I really can't, it's hard to go around and try to make a contract with all of the neighbors, but I put in that it would run for the benefit not only of the grantor, but the city as well, so that the city would have some rights. So that was just one thought in trying to get us to where I think everybody would like to
go. Go ahead.
And I, Mr. Bookbinder is very able and trying to figure out a way to get through this thing. A private restriction like this, though, needs to be re-recorded by somebody within 29 years or it lapses. So, right? So.
It's funny because you've actually educated me on this in the past.
Well, I made it out of what I said. So.
No, but the only question I have is this: is it different where it's for the benefit of the city? Does that get you? I think that may get you a longer.
It may get you somewhere. The question here is an interesting one because the this is an affirmative. Generally they're restrictive covenants. This is an affirmative covenant to build something and maintain it. I guess my sense is that I think part of what we're trying to do is figure out both the planning rationale but also the sense of protection, because this is a unique situation. It's really a site-specific rezoning. It's not the conventional rezoning we normally deal with. Land use would normally be, except for the fact that individual parcel rezonings come to us, the kind of thing that would go to land use and be used to conditions and all sorts of things. So we can't condition the zoning, but I guess I would like to have a sense that from the law department, if in fact there is a covenant that runs to the benefit of the city as well as to the abutters, and we've seen that actually occur in other contexts, that this will work here. And I'd also want to make sure, because we did hear from some of the abutters, I don't know if you're here tonight or not, or their representatives are, about whether this would resolve their concerns, because there would be an assurance of a fence, and the fence would be something. I think if it's going to run to the city, it ought to be reviewed by the planning department, at least, as terms of design.
I agree, and I should probably have the law department review it as well.
Read the covenant language?
Yeah, I actually have it with me tonight, and frankly, do you have that?
Yeah, we
can get copies.
So the planning department can review the fence plan, certainly.
We can do that. We can run it by the water. I mean, we want to comply. Sean is, you know, and Robert are happy to put the fence up.
Yeah, I think the part of the group is trying to make, you know, there's an understandable rationale. You've got to have a lot somewhere, and you might, and you'd like to have a lot being common ownership. It's just that the impact of that change is on the abutting residential properties that we've heard about, and we'd like to protect those folks if we can. So I would like to, you know, subject to how the committee feels, I'd prefer to have some sense from the law department. I'm sure Ms. Lawler can't give that right off the top of
her
head.
No, I can see that, but I could.
Yeah.
It's very hard off the press.
So.
Could I just ask one, I would have just one request, and that is, if you all felt that substantively this was appropriate, if you were so inclined to approve it tonight, I know I can get the work, the rest of this work out before it goes to the full board, because she's very anxious to have a parking in for the winter. And I think that if we have it, you know, subject to working this out with the law department of planning, and they give you an okay before it comes to the full board, then we're going to lose another couple of weeks.
Well, I guess the question I have, I'm not troubled by that, except where you said that it's difficult to talk. We did hear specifically from the two property owners, I think, that are immediately adjacent.
One family.
One family?
It's the one that's right...
Right by the building there, isn't it?
Yeah, James, it's the second one. Yes, that's it.
I think that was, it was the fence, but also, you know, there was something about the trash and dumpster.
And I guess I would like to have some clarification about that issue. And so yeah. Do you have any response on that problem as well?
I don't, but we're happy to reach out to them between now and the time it comes to.
Oh, but I think it was Sean, because you were there at the public hearing, and did they get about the dumpster?
I can certainly give background. The concern is that there isn't a fence there right now, because they had an old fence that sort of abutted the property line. And when the barn came down, and that area was really, it was dilapidated, it was rat infested, it was just really, it was a bad situation. So since that fence has been down, those folks have had no comfort or buffer zone. And since it's probably been now 9 long months where they're frustrated that we told them, Robert and I said that we would put the fence up for them right away, and we were going to put it up, and then we were told we couldn't do it. So right there, we lost a lot of, you know, legitimacy. They sort of thought that we had alleged, we spoke and said we were going to do it in good faith, and then now it's 9 months later and we've done nothing. And in that time, where the fence used to run was where the dumpster was. So now, in fact, their backyard and this lot and the dumpster are, you know, basically one and the same. So it's been a long, you know, time for them. And we had a lot of relationships with the dad. And then come to find out, you know, the dad is aging and the children are now in, you know, in the position where they're managing the property. And so we're more than welcome to restore relationships with them, and I think that that's something that we've worked really hard to be really good neighbors in there, and I think that we can get everything back in aligned. It's just been this absence of that fence that used to always be there, and now it's gone.
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
I guess if the key to this puzzle is the agreement and the fence that goes with it. Have you got an agreement with them about this? You mentioned there might be a conversation. I didn't know if that.
Well, we've picked out the fence they want. We've already.
No, I understand, but there's a covenant that would involve the creation of the fence, as I understand. Right?
It would be in the deed that goes from the trust which owns this new parcel, half of which goes to Sean and half of which goes. Right. We've not gotten the neighbors involved in that because, frankly, this brings 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different neighbors, and to be very candid, I just, to try to sit down and negotiate a fence with 5 different neighbors is not something that I relish. I think it's really difficult to do.
Well, but it seems like you're really negotiating with at least, tell me where the fence goes here, James, just so I'm
well,
sure.
Well, I think that the proposal that they're bringing forward is a fence for this entire area, is that correct?
There's a fence already in that area.
Right on your fingers, James. There is a fence there now. We would do the rest of it.
Oh,
yeah, going. Yes, we would do that. Okay.
Right.
And both those property areas, we've had relationships with and discussed with them and selected the fence so that it was going to run continuous. It's just that we had told them we were going to put it up about 6 months ago.
I understand. So the two property owners where James's hands are, the two people that have not, who you haven't talked to?
Just one.
There's
an Asian family that lives next to the fellow that showed up last week. He's a really nice guy, the guy that showed up above the dumpster and everything else, but he feels that our word is no good, because I myself told him when we had all this catastrophe that we were going to put a fence up right away because his fence was ruined. And the city came down on us pretty hard, and I totally understand it, because we did a lot of stupid things, and we didn't know what we could do and what we couldn't do, and we were filling it
well,
back
in. You're well advised now.
Yeah, so, yes, and, you know, and I totally understand them saying, hey, don't even pick up a rock, and we didn't, and that's what happened with the fence. Because, you know, I understand all these deeds and all this nonsense, but I also understand old school word, you shake somebody's hand, you do it. We would have done it already a long time. We would have been done that week, except when the city got so mad, which they had a right to.
No,
when they got so mad that it just, we couldn't do anything.
But
that's why he showed up.
I guess Alderman Yates is not here, and I know he's interested in this. I guess I would feel more comfortable voting this tonight myself if I had an assurance from council that you're going to talk to the butters who are going to be the people who the fence would face.
Yes, we will definitely.
And get their consent on the deed.
I hate to condition any consent. Because
well, we don't have to vote it tonight, Steve.
Okay, well then we can't, because I can't guarantee I can get their consent.
How about we say that we'll have the fence up by the time you vote it, if you give us permission? We'll have the fence up by the time you vote it.
You might not be able to.
I don't think you can, I wouldn't ask you to make that happen.
How long would it take before you vote?
You need a permit.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you would give us a permit just for a fence, we'll have it up by the time you vote it.
No, that won't happen. Angela, so and then Larry.
Just on what all that makes, I would disagree, and I would say that we could vote it out tonight contingent on them coming in with information. To your satisfaction or to the committee's satisfaction, and then Alderman Johnson can go and pull it back into committee if we're not ready by that time, because I hate to lose time. The other issue was the idea of bringing the city into the deed, and does the city want to be brought into the deed?
Well, the only thing he's talking about, the problem is a deed like this runs, he talked about something that's in perpetuity.
Right.
And a private restriction has to be re-recorded by the person that owns it within 29 years or it lapses, or it's 30 years, effectively 29. So the problem is you've got to have some private holder here. Mr. Bookbinder's trying to avoid having a private holder by having the city have it, because there's a statute which I found when we were having a conversation about some other land in the city a while back that basically says a publicly held restriction doesn't lapse if it's not re-recorded. So part of what he's trying to do is avoid the necessity for re-recording and avoid the necessity for any owner on the other side, just to have the city. The tricky problem from my perspective is that the city is not likely to be a very powerful enforcer here.
Right.
For all the reasons we know from Mr. Lojack's challenges, he's got enough on his plate. I can't imagine he's going to be looking for this.
Okay,
29
years from now,
we're so, I think I'm persuaded by Alderman Sangiolo's comment that we could vote it, but I do want to see an undertaking by the owner, so there's somebody out there who can enforce it besides the city, at least for the first period of time.
Isn't this the law that you're talking about, though? If that's only where there's no term of use. If you were to put a term of years on it, 99 years, then it wouldn't lapse for 99 years.
Mr. Walter shaking his head.
30 years.
And I think the restriction for the Commonwealth is that the Commonwealth is putting the restriction on it, then it doesn't lapse. I'm not sure that it works in the reverse.
That's a fair question. I don't know the answer.
It's a fair question.
So I think that in the interest of making sure that you have a promise that is not, you know, you all have made promises you couldn't keep, but I don't want you to make a promise that you can't, nobody can enforce. That would sort of add a problem to a problem. So
Could it be for the benefit of an owner, but not multiple? This is what I'm trying to avoid.
Well, you've got two fence lines there that I understand. You've got the property that to the north and the property to the south of the east line. Right? That's what we're really talking about. You're talking about the owners of those two properties, as I hear. Okay, so I think you get those two and you're done.
And one most particular, quite vocal, right behind the dumpster.
We'll do our best.
That's the reverse. And if we come up short, then we'll come back and tell you.
Okay. So this would be voted on a week from tonight, so so you know from a time frame. So it needs to be in our packet on Friday. So he needs to get it to you by when, Karen?
The law department has to have a chance to look at it.
But what time on Friday does he have to have it to you?
Oh, by noon.
By noon on Friday.
I won't have it before.
Okay, because I just don't want it to show up on our desk.
Oh, you won't.
Well, no. Right. So we don't lie to them again. When can we put the fence up? If we talk to them, when can we tell them we'll be able to put the fence up?
After this has been passed and you should get your permit.
2 weeks you'll be able to put the fence up?
20 days after. So it's going to take you the time to get it.
You can ask Mr. Lojack's new
inspector.
Mr. Lojack, can we do it right after the fence?
No. No, it's a process. But I think, you know.
So.
Okay, so Alderman Kalis.
So what it sounds to me, though, that for Mr. Bookbinder, that it's going to be difficult to get them to agree to anything.
Well, you don't know.
Well, if they've already feel burned, wow. Then to go to them and say, yes, we're getting approval for the fence and we're going to put it in 30 days or whenever Mr. Lojack says it's okay. I just feel like they're up against something they can't actually.
Well, let's try. What's your alternative? We don't pass it?
No, the alternative is we pass it.
Well, that's what we're saying, is we would pass it.
But we're making contingent on him.
Right, but he's got to find out. He's got to talk to them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've raised a concern, Alderman Kalis, so I think we need to honor that concern.
I agree. I just feel like he's not going to be able to get their approval.
I'm going to be optimistic. That's
the question over here.
That Shauna can help with that. Yes, Alderman Kalis.
I guess the issue for us is, you know, they own the property. They have a right to fence the property, correct? Well, we actually dealt in the sense that, as you may recall, when the building came down, there were some issues.
Right.
And we basically, I agree with Bill Ford, and David, when basically we have a ceasefire,
right,
not to do anything.
Right.
And the guys are
very simplified.
they don't want us to do anything because there's some things that I probably should have done. So as of today, my commitment to your office is that we won't do anything until we
do this. But I can preempt that.
Yes, you can.
I don't understand
the problem. If we said it was okay for the fence,
yeah.
Because you have a right to fence your property.
Yeah.
Then that shouldn't be anything that holds anything out. If the neighbors agreed that you could put up a fence, I can give you a permit to put up a fence.
That's right.
That's
also
why that's what you want.
Okay.
I mean, this was a, for the board's purposes, I mean, this was an enforcement action. They were punished rather severely with fines and a holdup, you know, which cost them an awful lot of time and money. So we don't have any issue with withdrawing that, especially in light of the fact we always say, hey, look, all we want to see is your feet moving in the right direction. And then, you know, so I don't see any reason to continue to punish them. If they were able to come to agree with the neighbors, we get something from the neighbors through them that says, we've agreed to the fence, boom, we'll give them a permit to put
and they're sitting there without a fence. Why not? Why wouldn't they agree to a fence?
Right. I mean, I can't see why they wouldn't.
Exactly. Alderman Dan would like to wrap it up, so.
Okay. The building that's on the property in the, you know, red lines, is that the barn that was taken down?
It's gone.
That's not there anymore.
In
philosophy, I agree with moving this along as quickly as we can, voting it on contingent on what needs to be done. But I asked a question that you may remember, Steve, during the public hearing. That was, I believe that there are two owners in the back lot. Is that true? And there were going to be, Shauna, there were going to be some parking places on a piece of it and not on the other piece of it. And the question that I asked was, would the owner of the rear portion of it be willing to lease to Dungarens that portion of the property so that they could use the entire property for parking and not just a piece of it? Because I think that would be even more helpful to the street and the...
That would give them a special permit.
That would require a special permit.
It sounds like it.
Because it's all street parking.
Well, I don't, that's not before us right now. Let's not introduce something else.
It's something that I help them up with if they need it themselves anyway.
Oh, yeah, but it's not part of our docket item, so let's...
Jerry, I am in favor of moving this along, making it contingent with a request that the materials be brought forward by the time we vote this out, and if not, Alderman Johnson can bring it back into committee.
Okay, there's a motion to approve with some contingencies. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor? Alderman Leary, Sangiolo, Hess Mahan, Kalis Johnson, Danberg, and Baker. Thank you. You're welcome. All right, next docket item, 23-15, parens 2, Acting Director of Planning and Development requesting amendments to the official zoning map in order to correct... James? Correct discrepancies between Board of Aldermen actions and the boundaries of zoning districts as shown on the map and to better align zoning district boundaries with property lines and other features to reduce the number of split lots and other map anomalies as follows. Change from SR3 to SR2. This is 120 Oldfield Road, 71 Brandeis Road. Change from SR2 to SR3 to SR3, 127 Oldfield Road, 84 Brandeis Road, 76 Brandeis Road, 61 Brandeis Road, and change from SR3 to SR1, 121 Rachel Road. And we did have a public hearing on this as well 4 weeks ago.
Yep. I'm not going to dive deep into this one. We've talked about these before. Again, this is simply a continuation of the process we began last June to eliminate split lots. In particular, at the last meeting, I basically identified an error in the planning department memo where we had a policy that we were moving lots towards their, we were rezoning lots into whatever the majority district was for any particular lot, but then we had this one particular lot that broke that rule, and I had not been aware of that before the meeting started, but basically in discussion with staff, the determination was twofold. One, was that we looked at the impact on the individual property, and there was not a significant impact between what their rights are now under the existing majority of the property and what they would be, and two, that there was a greater interest in having this block basically be one zoning district as opposed to basically having one odd lot out from the block. So that was the decision that led to incorporating basically this entire block into the SR3. So
now, Alderman Kalis was supposed to talk to somebody in this regard. What happened with that?
Didn't happen.
Okay.
I talked to James earlier today. We talked about that and confirmed that he had sent letters to everybody. He heard from one person.
On which one?
One of the households.
I heard from Rachel Rode.
Rachel.
Spent a while talking with Rachel Rode.
And Rachel Rode's okay?
Rachel Rode is fine. Okay. They didn't come to the public hearing.
And that this process has been going on, and he's been sending these letters and talking to all of the Repton residents and explaining it. And okay. I think that's satisfactory.
Okay. Any further discussion from committee members? Any motions? Okay, there's a motion to approve on the table. Any further discussion on the motion? If not, all those in favor? That's Alderman Hess Mahan, Kalis Johnson, Danberg, Baker, Leary, and Sangiolo. Ms. Stuckey. The last item tonight is...
Sorry, finding
one.
Oh. Are you guys going to try to take a vote on this item?
So you can go in and... Okay. All right, because you have the other one, the Shauna one, right? All right, so let's take up 222-13, parens 2, the Zoning Planning Committee proposed to amend chapter, thank you gentlemen, 30, City of Newton Zoning Ordinances to regulate the dimensions and setbacks of front-facing garages and residential zoning districts. As I recall, when we, when we were
looking at the two-family definition. We had at one point thought about trying to bundle this together, and it was, I think, as I recall, a little bit too much. So we separated it out past the two-family. So James has a... I thought we had a...
There was a memo on the garage regulations, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the memo was for that. I was just confused about the applicants. That's all.
Pardon? So you're confused about what?
No, the text. The final, I didn't quite understand right. What text we were... Any other.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the issue at play here is one that this committee has discussed on a number of occasions. It's the issue of development projects, houses, single-family, two-family, where the predominant image facing the street is garages.
Is that
Sandor? I actually don't know what street this is specifically. Our urban designer Rachel Dwyeron took pictures. One morning in a bunch of different streets. But clearly this is a street where we have a whole row of houses where the predominant function of the house is the garage. So there's been, I think one of the key points in this discussion is that we aren't regulating aesthetics, that we have to step away from regulating aesthetics and kind of our initial reaction to images like these. Of these properties, but what we do have an interest in is essentially the protection of the value of the public realm. And when I talk about public realm, what I'm talking about is the street, the sidewalk and the street, basically. That public property, the space in front of the in front of our homes, that's shared by the entire neighborhood, effectively shared by the city. And so, what values are we protecting within the public realm? One of the key ones is the character of the community. This idea of sense of place, which is alluded to a great deal in our comprehensive plan. It's really given a very prominent position, and the literature and planning would support that the value of sense of place, that value character, is very high for the city. The other thing that we're looking at here is essentially that one's sense of community and how that connects to the public safety and ultimately the maintenance of the neighborhood, the street, and again, that idea of the public realm. So what the literature shows is where there isn't a sense of a direct connection, a direct pedestrian connection between a home and the street out front, there's a diminished sense of community and a diminished sense of ownership between property owners within the community and the public realm beyond. A sense that it's essentially a drive-in, drive-out community rather than one that in which people interact, essentially the idea of getting to know your neighbors. In those types of environments, without that sense of ownership of the street out in front of your house, long term, there's the potential that you can see a decline in maintenance of the street, decline in maintenance of that environment, and again, the public safety element, there isn't a sense of surveillance of the public realm, surveillance of the street. So, from that perspective, those are the public interests at play when we think about the design, if you will, of the front of homes. So this isn't an issue that's restricted strictly to newer houses. There's some kind of older 50s, 60s houses, perhaps the 70s, I'm not sure, where the same issue appears. And then we also have the issue with two families, which we've spent a lot of time talking as well.
Cypress Street.
Yeah. Right, where you have these long stretches of two-car garages directly next to each other, which leads to really long stretches of asphalt in the front, and what is at best an uncomfortable crossing distance for pedestrians, and essentially an unwelcoming environment on the street side. By contrast, there's a lot of ways that an attached garage can be incorporated into a house in a way that protects that value of that direct pedestrian connection. They call this passing the trick-or-treat test, right? Trick-or-treater coming down the street, where do they go? I can tell on this house, I can tell on that one, and this one I'm getting a little lost, and this one, you know, am I knocking on the garage door? I don't know.
This is a wonderful planning rationale. I haven't heard this before.
There's the side entry garage.
I like that. Yeah.
side entry garage, and even where there's front entry, and this one comes forward a little bit, but this isn't terrible in the grand scheme of, again, you've got that direct pedestrian connection. The character such as it is to a degree preserved as well. So the proposed regulations, at this point in time at least, are relatively simple. We're looking at what were proposed. We looked at a lot of different regulations from across the country. In fact, there was I think one of your constituents who submitted a whole bunch of those, were very helpful. We looked at a lot. We spent a lot of time looking at Portland, Oregon's ordinance in particular, because there was a great deal of work that went into the development of their ordinance. What we came up with at this point in time is to require that the garage setback be in line with the building facade, neither in front of nor behind, but in line. And it's defined specifically as kind of the longest street-facing front of the building. That up to 50% of the street-facing building facade, no more than 50% of the street-facing building facade, be garage frontage. Or in this case, we use the term garage wall, which is inclusive of the garage entrance. And then, finally, the third one, and this was really to get at these side-by-side garages and that kind of big area of pavement that creates out in front, was to separate these garages by, at this point, 10 feet of living area. Where we are in this process is, let me start with actually the feedback I'm really hoping to get from this committee is I don't really want to get into the language or even too much of the dimensions. I want to get some feedback on, is this the right direction? What your thoughts are on, flush with the front? Do we allow a little bit of the garage to project forward 4 or 6 feet maybe, as long as we're not getting that 10, 20 feet area? And then discuss the general principles that we've discussed that are kind of laid out by the proposed zoning language. Our next steps are to begin, and this is in no particular order, many of these things may occur simultaneously, but review with law and ISD. The specific language, we'd like to discuss this with the Urban Design Commission and with some local architects. And then start with
Alderman Crossley since she's on the board.
Sure, right. And then work on final language and dimension and finalize kind of a proposal to bring back to this committee.
So I wanted to ask Alderman Hesmahan, because you raised the initial concern, so kind of what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think this is the right direction to go in, and I wanted to get it back up because I felt like the last time we met, we didn't have any language last time, and I understand, you didn't want to focus on the language tonight. That's what I meant by my comment, was that we're not hoping to approve some language for a public hearing tonight. Is that right? Okay. So, a couple things that they could raise. I mean, first of all, let me, in no particular order, the corner lot is always a problem, particularly in MR zones. Which one is the front? And as I come to find out with a constituent in West Newton, nobody seems to know what the side or the rear lot line is either.
No.
So it does create a problem. I think we need to have some sort of definition for that, where we're going to be talking about the garages, because what's going to happen is that, where the driveway gets located and your trick-or-treat tents may factor into that, I don't know. So that's first and foremost. I want to make sure that it's clear what the front, side, and rear lot lines are, and particularly with respect to the corner lots. The second one, on the garage setback, initially, I have no problem with being flush. I'm a little less enamored of a garage that's proud of the building. And it just really depends on, when you're talking about 50% of that front facade being proud of the rest of the house and a gable over it, that's a massive structure that faces the street, and it can be very, very wide if it's a wide lot. If it's a narrow lot, that's less of a problem, because I know that it's a real challenge, and in fact, the Historic Commission, when dealing with the neighborhood historic commissions at Auburndale or Newtonville, have adopted, I think, set of guidelines, we call them rules, because I don't know in writing guidelines, about locating garages where none already exists and putting them on the sides and in the rear. Mm-hmm. So they've already adopted something, so I would ask the BBC, perhaps the Historic Commission, that may come up in the context of either demolition delays or historic districts. So I want to make sure that it's uniform, so we don't have several different sets of rules. And then finally, I think I have two more things. One is whether people are comfortable with 50% or whether 33% or some other number is better. I'm comfortable with 50%, but so long as it's not crowded with the building, because I think that's when you start getting into, you know, a garage with a house on the back.
Right. We did, across all of the different ordinances we looked at, the many of them had this kind of frontage language, and it was 50-55%.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah. And the last thing was, I'm a little confused by the 10%, the living area between the garages. I'm not quite sure how that...
And that's particularly one where we're trying to get at this idea of making sure that they're separated. But you can't just say they can't be side by side, because so it was kind of landing on the, and we honestly don't know what the right number is to stick in there. So really, the 10 feet is there as kind of a placeholder. This is a place where we're charting new ground. There aren't any examples of anyone else having this kind of distinction.
I mean, I would have thought that the 50% would pretty much solve
and
the problem.
It pretty much does. Solve the problem, and so it may be a provision that we end up pulling out, but for right now we kind of threw it in there for discussion purposes and to see if we can make something work that would be useful.
James, can you go back to the first, your first picture? That.
Yeah.
So given what you're talking about, what would someone have to do on just this first one, the kind of the goldy colored, beigey one?
I don't know the particulars of this site or these lots and how they're laid out, but what we do know, you referenced the historic district's guidelines on garage placement. There are a large number of house plans out there now, and I didn't dive into these, but Rachel did spend some time looking at these and found solutions for side placement garages and other things for more narrow lots. And
okay, I think that's how we have alternatives for people.
Yeah.
Yes, Alderman Danberg and Baker.
Okay. I would actually like to see a 5-foot setback on the garage. We looked at some other communities that had 10-foot setbacks and some had 5, and I would like to see a little bit of a setback on the garages. I'm okay with 50% if we can get the look that the main portion of the house on the street is the living portion and not the garage. I know that we're not dealing with entry access. The trick-or-treat test is an interesting concept. I really like that term because I think it explains exactly what you're trying to get at, that you want to be able to identify how you get into the house from the street side, and that's what provides the sense of friendliness and the sense of place and the sense that this is a house and not a fortress. So I'm not sure how you'd deal with the 10 feet or what you'd even do with it. But my two issues, I guess, would be that I would recommend attempt to get a 5-foot setback or some kind of a setback that wouldn't have to be a whole lot, but it would be some kind of a setback for garages on the front facade, and no more than a 50% presence on the front. And I'd say you've got to have an entry on the front, but we're not talking about entries here. We're talking about garages. If you can work that in by the trick-or-treat test, great.
Alderman Baker and Caleb.
First, I endorse the idea of some setback beyond and above the facade, because I think the point here is to try and make the garage secondary. James, can you go back to run your pictures again, if you don't mind? Okay, so that garage is in front, but it's secondary in terms of the width. And go to the next one, if you would, please. This is obviously not. And even if that looks a little setback, that's still a problem.
Would that be considered setback, though?
Yeah, this one would be, this is flush.
Well, yeah. It's a little hard for me to tell, but because the reason I say it's hard for me to tell, there is a, the projection the facade is sticking out. So, you know, somebody might say, well, I'm set back here, but they're really, I mean, optically.
That has to be set back on the foundation. Yeah.
As the language is laid out, it says, it says in line with essentially the longest wall. Maybe no closer than the front lot line than the longest street-facing wall of the dwelling unit.
Okay.
So in this case, this one would be consistent with that rule.
Okay. Well, I just, not directly relevant, but I think we went through the whole question of dormers and how much of the dormer, and we were reaching in the same direction but in a different context to try and have the feature not be dominant but be secondary. And I guess that's why I'm sympathetic to the 55% model that many of you've looked at rather than just 50%. So if there's a legitimate setback and a legitimate minority share, then I feel more comfortable with it. The question, though, I do want to ask about is the separation of living space, because if you go to the next one, if you would, not that, but beyond it. No, there. There's the garage that's projecting out, and we would try and avoid that, but would those two bays have to be separated?
No, that's one garage.
That's considered one garage.
Right, so the separated garage is when you have two families, specifically targeted at two families.
I'm sorry.
I should have been more clear there. So it's targeted at this scenario specifically.
I got you. Okay. Then I'm sympathetic to that. I just didn't understand how it would work if you had two bays.
Fair enough.
Okay.
All set? Yep. Alderman Cable, Larry, and then Hesmahan.
So the 50% to me does make sense. Is that the minimum that you saw when you were comparing?
It was, yeah.
Okay. And the only other comment I was going to have is on your third point of the 10 feet between the garages on a two-family is to state what we mean, because now it's just confusing what we're trying to get at.
Right.
I think if we just are very clear on as to, you know, first of all, it's for two families, but secondly, what you're trying to achieve there, I think that would help a lot.
Well, that goes to your purpose and intent state, you know, right? Which we're trying to have in all our ordinances.
Yeah.
Right. You know, what's the purpose? Why are we doing it? Now, set. Alderman Larry?
I would say the purpose is to design to have a house that so that the garages don't dominate the streetscape.
Well, and in fact, you get some nice things around the values and stuff.
I just want to say, if you were asking for general comments, that I absolutely think you're on the right track, and I'm very happy to see this movement, because I do really value, what we think of as traditional homes, where there's a front door and there's some green grass or kids can play and you can find the house trick-or-treating, and some of those examples are just terrible. And I'm also concerned about the length of span that a pedestrian has to walk across the driveway. Talk about, you know, people are concerned about underground parking. Look at that. And why, since I had a question in terms of, so my main view is to have the front of the house, the front door, the porch be welcoming, and that be the main entrance. And how to do that? Well, I would say the garage should be less than 50% of the entrance width to a home, unless maybe the garage is set back a certain number of feet. And I'm wondering if you could do some kind of combination, if that would make sense.
Certainly, there's a lot of examples that go into greater detail where the more you shrink it, the more forward the garage can be. The other example, and actually Portland, Oregon uses this. Let me see if I can use this as an example as best I can. They actually allow you to project forward if this space kind of in this L is occupied by a real front porch. And there is a good example. I didn't use the image, but there's a good example from Newton that shows that type of use as well. And what the front porch effectively does is it brings the front of the house forward, right? So the front porch essentially mitigates the problem created by the forward projecting garage. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things that we could do. I will say it's part of my hesitancy in going too far into
tailoring the regulations,
yeah.
is that I what I'd like to do is in phase two, we're going to do a kind of an in-depth look at the overall city as it's built today, with the end goal of being able to tailor regulations like these more towards individual areas of the city. And so I see an opportunity to do that down the road.
Okay, so sort of getting more depth and more
right.
detail about
I guess what I'm recognizing right now is that these degree of regulations are going to be spread kind of citywide on a pretty broad scale. And as we've seen with other regulations, when we spread them broadly like that, we almost necessarily have to dumb them down to a degree. I'm more than happy, and as we move forward, to explore a little more variation
okay.
in this set of regulations, if that's what you would like to see.
Okay, Alderman Hess, by hand.
So I was going to bring up the front porch example, because I think that does mitigate the, mm-hmm. if you are going to have it proud of the front. What I would suggest, though, because if we have a regulation that says that you can't have a garage, that a garage has to be set back, you're going to create a whole bunch of non-conforming ranch houses
yep.
that right now are house, and then they've got a garage, and it's flush with the rest of the front wall. And I would hate to, you know, replace one problem with another. And every time you make buildings non-conforming, you're inviting some mischief. But what I would suggest is that if it's going to be a setback, that be for where the front is up to 50%. If the front is up to, say, a third, I don't see any reason why it can't be flush. And again, the example is the ranch house that I think, well, I grew up surrounded by ranch houses, so just whether it's a... whether it's a carport or whether it's a garage, you know, actual built-in garage, is part of the structure itself. And I think everyone's...
I'm not in trouble about that.
Yeah. No. But we were talking about setting back the garage. And I think the larger the garage is, the more rationale there is for setting it back
from
the front facade.
Is there... Do you have a sliding scale?
Oh, I think if it's a third, that I'm fine with it. If it's just a third of the front facade...
You can stay flush.
I'm fine with it being flush.
Yeah, but if you'd support it... I'm sorry.
I would be more inclined towards requiring some sort of setback if it's 50%. Yeah,
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah,
I don't want to get unless you've got a porch on it to mitigate.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to get
over
micromanaged design on every building.
The basic point is to minimize the impact.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
I think the other thing for me is that if you go back to one of your first two. The amount of impervious surface that these create,
yeah.
that, and I don't know, you know, when you're doing this, and I haven't looked at the stuff carefully recently, whether that's a factor, because I think, you know, even if you have a certain amount, you're thinking about the impervious surface, so just...
The stormwater rigs might help deal with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right, but yeah. anyway, so... Alderman Dan Burke and Caleb.
My point was going to be an impervious surface. Thank you for bringing that up. I think that no more than the amount of front, the percentage of frontage that is allowed for the driveway should be impervious surface. There are some streets, like my street, the people that live across the street from me, that have no place to put their cars besides in front of their houses that we would have to be able to deal with. But I think that impervious surface, they've got patio block and it looks much better than all this asphalt. And I think we could allow patio block for people that need more coverage on the front. But this is something that I think we should avoid. And I think we should...
Let's get a little greenery there. See if
sure.
It's very attractive.
I think that we should rule against. And if we've got a number of these that will then be put into nonconformity, so be it. I don't have any problem with putting places like this into nonconformity.
With that point, Mr. Lojack?
Well, just observing the conversation...
I just want to make some comments for the community to think about as you go ahead. If you're allowed a third, for example, you have a 60-foot wide building, it's a 20-foot to put in a two-car garage. There aren't many houses that are 60 feet across the front, not on your average in a lot. So that's sort of a tough figure to deal with. How do you deal with carports? Are they a garage or are they not? It's not a garage door, it's an open space. That's something that has to be thought about. One of the things we see is that when people try to put them around the side, increase the impervious surface. They need more driveway. So then it runs into an open space problem. And it was one of the things we challenged at the CBA recently. It wasn't a problem there. However, you do see an increase in impervious surface when you put side garages in because you put driveway in and then a turn. So it's a very tough balancing act. 10 feet between the garages, I'm just pointing out, as we see these things, we see this thing as whack-a-mole. Because quite honestly, the architectural community out there is going to figure out a way to defeat it. They do it with every regulation. That's their job. I don't blame them for that. But, you know, so, you know, when you push here, they're going to pop up over here. And then you push there, and they pop up over here. So, I mean, these are just some of the things that I just think the committee might want to think about. I have no problem with regulation up to the point where we start doing design. 10 feet between the two structures, you're going to hear from the architecture community, it causes a lot of wasted space. They're going to have a real problem with things like that. 10-foot setback, are you going to have, I'm just saying, if that was something you decide, you're going to have a separate setback regulation for garages versus the house. And I think what you're going to do is you're going to end up with some very ugly results, like cantilevers. The garage is setback, but the house projects out over on the second floor. You know what I'm saying? And you're going to see posts and things, because they're not going to give up living space. The market in Newton requires garages. That's what we hear from the builders, the architects, and the people who want houses built. They're going to have a two-car garage, damn it, and that's all there is to it. Because that's what drives the market in Newton right now. You see a lot of houses, and I had a builder today talking to the counter. He purposely, for design purposes, didn't put in a garage. He's struggling to sell the house. And it's a perfectly nice house, but nobody wants it because it doesn't have a garage. It doesn't have a garage. Those are just some of my observations. You know, and they're struggling with the setbacks now. I mean, we get, obviously, people are going to push it right up to the limit. Now, what happens if, you know, as it says in 3015, or used to say when it was 3015, you know, no building need to be set back more than the buildings in the last nearest neighbor. Now what do you do? You know, that the average setback prevails. So if the building only needs to be set back 15 feet, what do you do? So I just, like I said, I'm just listing comments and thinking about the kinds of things that we're going to see where the pushback is. Kind of comments we get at the counter all the time about the various regulations. So that's all I wanted to say. Other than that, I have heard from people, for the committee's purposes, that there's a lot of people out there that really like the rewrite, the form of the rewrite. There's a lot of people that said I can actually find things, which is encouraging, and I think it's a great tribute to James and his crew and this committee for a lot of work that was done. But it is nice to just give some feedback. A lot of people said, geez, I read it. I can actually understand it. I said, geez, I'm on the job. But that's just, thank I think it's important.
Can we reconsider our vote earlier?
Pardon me?
Never mind.
No, but I just think it's important for the community to know that a lot thank of people some very good comments about the reformatting.
Alderman Kalis and Dan Bergen.
That's
like
great. I wanted to ask the commissioner for his feedback on this, and then to see James. What, as you're drafting this, had you talked to him or anybody?
No, I have not yet.
Community?
You,
okay.
But you'll see next steps. Discuss with UGC and local architects.
All right.
I'm sorry. Review with law and ISD. Discuss with UGC and local.
Yeah.
So,
this is unintended consequences that I wanted to understand. So.
Absolutely.
Alderman Denver. Good points that you brought up, John, and on the impervious surface with the side garages. My only concern
is how much impervious surface there is in front of the house, and not necessarily what goes to the back, or how far it has to go to the back. If you have a 1920s house and the garage was built way in the back because cars used to explode and catch fire, then you've got to asphalt all the way to the back, and that's fine. I'm just concerned within the front of the house.
Okay. Anything else? Do I hear a motion to hold?
Move hold.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor? Solomon, Leary, Sangiolo, Hess, Mahan, Kalis, Johnson, Danberg, and Baker. Is there a motion to adjourn?
We're recording our vote on the...
You good? No, I thought you were going away and... You overruled?
I was pressed for the last part of the presentation.
Okay.
On the rezoning of those lots, the board approved 3-0 one extension.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, and you'll have a write-up for us?
I will draft plans.
Great, thank you.
That's my write-up right now. I'll
send you something back.
We'll have to turn it
in the light. All right. Motion to adjourn. Good.